and welcome to the last ever Why This Movie, a podcast about the movies we love and why we love them so much. This is our last podcast. I've enjoyed doing it over the last year or so. I've gotten to meet some people I otherwise would not have met. I've gotten to see some films that I otherwise would not have seen. And I've been astonished by the depth of some of the conversations. There's no way to really predict exactly where a conversation is going to go in general. And even when it is focused on the topic of a particular film, it always goes into something else eventually. It always goes into something a bit deeper. And that's what I've enjoyed so much about this whole process. But there are so many podcasts, so many film podcasts, and there are podcasts about this subject matter that do it better than I do. So for those of you who have listened faithfully, I am so appreciative of that. It's meant so much to me. If you feel like there's a gap that you want to fill, I recommend listening to What Went Wrong. It's a podcast that has great respect for films and goes in depth on how difficult it is to make a movie, even movies that we don't like or that are not successful. It's so difficult to make a movie. It just is. But this goes into what kind of goes haywire on each production, one at a time. And it's done with warmth and humility. And it's just something I really enjoy. Chris and Lizzie do a great job. I recommend listening to that podcast if you still want to listen to a movie podcast, since this one is going away. When Charles Dickens published A Christmas Carol in 1843, he can't have had any notion how many times the story would go on to be adapted. For one thing, motion pictures didn't exist yet, which is where his work has been retold the most times. By some estimates, A Christmas Carol has been adapted close to 400 times across film and television, going as far back as 1901's Scrooge, or Marley's Ghost, which was a silent short film. Ebenezer Scrooge has been played on screen by everyone from George C. Scott to Jim Carrey to Patrick Stewart to my personal favorite, Michael Caine, in 1992's The Muppet Christmas Carol. In 1988, that task was given to Bill Murray, though he wouldn't be playing Ebenezer Scrooge. In this version, called Scrooged, directed by Richard Donner, he would be Frank Cross, an egomaniacal yuppie who runs a television network.
7 o'clock, Psycho sees Santa's workshop, and only Lee Majors can stop them. In the night the reindeer die. Be here.
You can't show that commercial. That thing looked like the Manson family Christmas special.
I think I'm way off base.
Yes, you're a tad off base, sir.
Frank Cross is more than the youngest network president in television history.
Call security, have them change his locks, and toss him out of the building.
Oh, he's fired? It's Christmas.
Thank you. Call accounting. Stop his bonus.
Watch out.
He's a thoughtful boss.
Thanks, boys. Get the nurse.
A generous brother.
What did he give you last year?
I don't remember.
A shower curtain.
Did you need him? I think you dropped something here.
And a true humanitarian.
I can't get the antlers glued onto this little guy. We've tried crazy glue.
Have you tried staples?
But his life is about to change.
That was a good one.
You are going to be visited by three ghosts tomorrow at noon.
God, tomorrow's bad for me, Lou. As a matter of fact, the whole rest of the week is a washout.
Anyone who thinks he hates Christmas is wrong.
Come back to Jersey, you moron!
It's ghosts he hates.
I love that bit!
Murray. Karen Allen.
It sounded like he'd seen a ghost.
A ghost?
John Forsythe. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Hey! You want to see me, or is this a shotgun in your pocket? You know this one?
Everybody knows this one. Let's go now.
Now, does everybody know this one?
Carol Kane. Robert Mitchum.
I really care.
David Johansen.
Oh, I'm having the weirdest day.
See Bill Murray get Scrooged.
Hey, back off, big man. That may work with the checks, but not with me.
Frank Cross is overseeing his network's upcoming live production of Scrooge with an enormous amount of money and possibly his future career prospects on the line. In this scene, he's unhappy with the commercial his ad team has put together. He directs some of his remarks to Elliot Loudermilk, played by Bobcat Goldthwait, who will become sort of a Bob Cratchit stand-in.
I know the people.
Well, granted, but the people already want to watch the show.
That isn't good enough! They have got to be so scared to miss it, so terrified! Now, if I were in charge, and I am...
The other stand-in for Bob Cratchit is Frank's long-suffering assistant, Grace, played by Alfre Woodard.
Grace, what in the hell is this?
Well, that's a painting one of my kids did. There's Santa Claus, and there's Mrs. Claus.
Honey, how many fingers does Mrs. Santa Claus have here?
11.
11. Right. It's crap. Lose it. I don't want it on the walls.
Here, Grace goes over his list of Christmas gifts for the people in his life.
Okay, read me the list. I want to get this over with.
Sammy Goldberg.
Bath towel.
Lou Parker.
Send him a VHS home video recorder.
Colonel Tom Parker.
The bath towel.
Tamara Forstall.
VHS.
Glenn Whitaker.
What was the last rating on Poliso?
5.2 Nielsen, 7 a share, and TVQ 3.
Towel!
Your brother.
Towel.
Your only brother.
Oh, God, Grace, give it to me!
After this scene, in conversation with his only brother, Frank Cross says what he thinks about Christmas. He loves it. Because it's good for business. People stay inside, out of the cold weather, and watch television, and he benefits from the ratings. His younger brother, played by Bill Murray's actual younger brother, John Murray, embraces the holiday. He gets together with friends and makes meaningful gifts and lets the Christmas spirit do its thing. One wonders how these guys grew up in the same household and came out with such different outlooks on life.
So, any chance of you maybe making Christmas dinner this year?
None.
Come on, why not?
Don't start, James.
Come on, the whole family will be there. It'll be fun.
Look, you can have your concerned and wonderful dinner with all your cool friends and the real popcorn on the tree and cranberries and everything.
Yeah.
Send Christmas cards to each other on recycled paper. It's a crock, James. It's for kids. You know, I like seeing you. I like being with you. I want you to have a happy new year.
I'm kind of alarmed to admit that I can feel myself slipping into Frank Cross's mindset about this holiday. But I can't be the only one. I mean, here's the thing. Christmas and our feelings about Christmas are largely formed by how it's presented to us as kids in whatever household and family we inherited when we were born. And obviously many, if not most, households and families are at best complicated and all too often toxic or abusive, so the idea of Christmas spirit and goodwill to men can come off as naive. The holiday season can be a wonderful occasion to get together with old friends and to find new ways to be generous, but there's more to it than that. According to the American Psychological Association, 89% of adults in the United States experience greater stress during the holidays, while over 60% of individuals with mental health conditions see their symptoms get worse this time of year. So Frank Cross or Ebenezer Scrooge or the Grinch perhaps speak to a greater disparity between what Christmas is meant to be and the reality of how we see it play out. He's a jerk, this Bill Murray character. He rips down artwork made by his assistant's children from her office wall. and steals a cab from an old lady. But mostly, I think he's just deeply sad. A man to be reviled, yes, but also pitied. Like Jacob Marley in the original story, Frank's boss and mentor, Lou Hayward, has been dead as a doornail for 7 years. And, like in the original, he shows up to warn his friend about the way he's living his life before it's too late.
Frank, you are in trouble. Big trouble.
All right. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that you're right, that I am in big trouble. What exactly would that mean?
Look at me. Look at your future. Now, if you don't change your ways, you're going to wind up doomed, just as I am. 1 minute, I'm on the 14th hole at Wingfoot, lining up a putt. A heart attack later, I'm a worm feast.
No, 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 no. You're not a worm feast. You're an hallucination brought on by alcohol, Russian vodka poisoned by Chernobyl. I've been under a lot of pressure lately. I've been putting on a big...
Silence! Out. I had it all.
Ooh.
I was a captain of industry. Feared by men, adored by women.
Adored? Let's be honest, Lou. You paid for the women.
I'm warning you, Frank. Don't waste your life as I did mine.
Waste? How can you say that? You're a legend in this business. You're the man who invented the miniseries.
Mankind should have been my business. Charity, mercy, kindness, that should have been my business. Don't wait. Get yourself involved. Now, it's too late for me, but it's not for you.
The original version of this line appears in Dickens's work as mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence were all my business. It fascinates me how the different versions of this story have interpreted this moment, as it sort of sums up, from what I understand, the essence of what A Christmas Carol is about. The ghost disappears, and Frank finds himself safely back in his office. His landline, on its own, dials a phone number and makes an outgoing call to someone from Frank's past. Her name appears as Claire Phillips. When Frank goes to catch a cab the next day, his driver is the first of the promised three spirits.
Stop! Going the wrong way!
Relax, Frank. Enjoy the ride.
How do you know my name?
I know absolutely everything, Frank. You see, I'm the ghost.
The ghost of Christmas Past has elf ears and big rotten teeth. He's played by David Johansen, a.k.a. Buster Poindexter. They arrive in Frank's old neighborhood in the year 1955, according to the meter in the cab. Inside the house, the only one on the street not decorated with Christmas lights, there's a 4-year-old Frank Cross, glued to the television on Christmas Eve. His father walks in, wearing a bloody butcher's apron, and drops his son's gift on the floor beside him.
Merry Christmas.
A choo-choo train?
No, it's 5 pounds of veal.
But Daddy, I asked Santa for a choo-choo.
Well, then go out and get a job and buy a choo-choo.
Ah, Earl, he's only 4 years old.
All day long, I listen to people give excuses why they can't work. My back hurts, my legs ache. I'm only 4. The sooner he learns that life isn't given to you on a silver platter, the better.
The next stop through Christmas Past is the night he meets Claire, the woman whose number was dialed on its own. This is a meet-cute for the person who is clearly the love of his life.
Cupid's arrow right between the eyes.
Oh, God, are you all right?
Oh, you know, you probably shouldn't move someone who's had a bad blow to that.
Where did I get you?
You got me right here. And the sidewalk got me back here.
Oh, it's going to be quite a lump. I'm sorry, here.
As Frank watches his younger self with this girl played by Karen Allen, Bill Murray's face softens in a way it hasn't up to this point in the movie. His whole being seems to relax and he smiles, genuinely, at the memory of being in love. The following Christmas Eve, like with all A Christmas Carol iterations, Frank and Claire part ways after he chooses his television career over a commitment he had made to her. Thus begins his cutthroat, successful life, one in which he's ruthless and shrewd and lonely. Back in the present, Frank, shaken by watching his past play out before him, looks up Claire at the temporary shelter where she's helping people off the street get warm and fed on Christmas Eve. Frank takes Claire in his arms and expresses his regret before his selfish instincts kick in when her commitments to the shelter prevent her from being able to leave with him at that very moment. She asks for just a minute to square some things away, and then she'll go with him wherever he wants to go.
Take the rest of your life. I'm going to give you some advice, Claire. Scrape them off. You want to save somebody? Save yourself.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful attitude to have on Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas.
Bah humbug.
With the Ghost of Christmas Present, played by Carol Kane, Frank Cross sees two scenes. In one, he watches the warmth of his secretary Grace's family unfold in a small apartment in which even a Christmas tree is an extravagance the single mother can't afford. Her son Calvin, a Tiny Tim surrogate, is silent, having not uttered a word since seeing his father killed years earlier. The next scene is the party at his brother's house he was invited to. Three young couples play games and enjoy themselves, and when James's wife says something cynical about Frank, his brother jumps to his defense. What Frank sees from the past and present are brutal. There are people struggling financially that he could help if he thought of anyone besides himself. There are people who refuse to give up on him, even when there's no evidence to think he'll ever change his ways. Christmas Present ends with Frank Cross finding Herman, a guy from Claire's shelter who had asked him for $2 so he could pay to heat his room. And now he's frozen to death.
You moron! You jerk! Why didn't you stay with Claire? Why didn't you stay with Claire? She would have taken care of you. You would have eaten. You would have been warm. You might be alive. You'd be a prettier color, I'll tell you that!
Scrooged in A Christmas Carol is heartbreaking. Even though things do eventually turn around in time for Christmas morning, the tragedy that transpires on our way there is almost too much to ask of us. Sick children, dead family members, and regret. Years of regret. And those aren't made up phenomena for the sake of the story. All of those things are real. None of us get through life without experiencing them firsthand. And once the paranormal aspects are stripped away, without visitations from ghosts, there's still suffering and poverty and families who struggle just to get by. And that is so woven into the fabric of the Christmas season, the season itself doesn't exist without it. Every Christmas tree casts a shadow, and to ignore the shadow is a mistake. The Ghost of Christmas Future shows Frank some truly awful stuff. He sees Grace's son, Calvin, institutionalized and still not talking. He frantically tells the ghost that he knows a pediatrician who could help, that he'll take care of it once he gets back to his life. He sees Claire, cold and heartless like he is, refusing to help a pitiful group of kids asking for a handout.
Look at those filthy little creatures. We
give me gentlemen.
Oh, Claire, Claire, they're just children.
Please, darling. Don't tell me. I wasted 20 years of my life on pathetic little creatures like those. Finally, thank God, a friend of mine said to me, scrape them off, Claire. You want to save somebody. Save yourself.
I'm sorry, Claire.
Thanks a lot, Lumpy.
Finally, he sees his own death. His coffin is slowly moved into a crematorium as his brother looks on.
Why are you showing me this stuff? I can't do anything, Dad. Why the hell did you bother to show me this stuff?
James, help me. No. Oh. Please don't let him hurt me, James.
Jimmy, don't let him hurt me. Please don't let him hurt me.
And, like with Ebenezer Scrooge before him, he finds himself alive and in one piece.
I will work! Oh God, it's the sun! I never thought I'd see the sun again! I'm alive!
Not for long!
Milkman! I'm the Woodstock baby! I'm gonna start with you. You're one of my favorites! Come here! I'm alive, and so are you!
Frank Cross interrupts his own live television broadcast to share the epiphany that's come from being spirited away to the past, present, and future.
That happened because it's Christmas Eve, I'm telling you! I'm not crazy. It's Christmas Eve. It's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer. We smile a little easier. We share a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we always hoped we would be.
He speaks with a desperation here that always gets to me. He's someone who's been transformed, someone whose eyes have been opened after going through life blinded by selfishness and cynicism and pain.
You have to do something. You have to take a chance. You do have to get involved. There are people that are having trouble making their miracle happen. There are people that don't have enough to eat. There are people that are cold. You can go out and say hello to these people. You can take an old blanket out of the closet and say, here. You can make them a sandwich and say, oh, by the way, here.
The encouraging part of this is that he sort of lays out the formula for how to make the miracle happen. You have to give. You have to get involved.
It's not just the poor and the hungry. It's everybody who's got to have this miracle. And it can happen tonight for all of you. If you believe in this spirit thing, the miracle will happen, and then you'll want it to happen again tomorrow. You won't be one of these bastards who says Christmas is once a year and it's a fraud. It's not. It can happen every day. You just got to want that feeling. And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it. You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you. I believe in it now. I believe it's going to happen to me now. I'm ready for it. It's great. It's a good feeling. It's really better than I felt in a long time.
He makes it sound so simple, but he's right. He's right. And the tears in Bill Murray's eyes as he finishes his exalted proclamations lead me to believe that if his miracle hasn't arrived yet, it's very, very close. Frank reunites with Claire, fixing one of the glaring omissions from a true happy ending in the traditional telling of A Christmas Carol. And the little boy speaks for the first time in years, moved by Frank's joyous words. I'm still coming to terms with how I really feel about Christmas. I get depressed, or more depressed, around this time of year, which is certainly not unique to me. And I've wondered if it's because I don't like Christmas. But now I think maybe it's because I love Christmas so much, or I love what it can be, that it overwhelms me when it inevitably falls short. This change of heart that happens to Frank Cross, and happens to most main characters in Christmas movies, is a beautiful thing to witness. A transformation that, if translated to real life, I fear would not be quite as pure or not quite as lasting. It's nice to think of us being as concerned with the poor and the hungry and the sick all year long, as opposed to just Christmas Eve. But the trees come down, and the coat drives and food drives end until next year. But the poor and the hungry and the sick are still here, all around us, all year long. And the thought that they become less visible starting on December 26th breaks my heart. I take Christmas seriously. And I guess that's why it can bring me down. I've wondered how I can watch the same Christmas movies every year without it feeling like they're wearing thin. In almost every one of them, all the shit goes down on Christmas Eve, with everything getting resolved and the season's true meaning shining through by Christmas morning. There's always a change of heart. There's always some kindness that makes the difference in the characters' lives, or even a speech that lays out what's so beautiful about this holiday. And I know I'll keep watching the same ones year after year because, personally, I need the reminder.